Welcome back to A Year of War and Peace, the podcast where we go from War and Peace Zero to War and Peace Hero in 1 year flat. You know what I've decided? I think I've decided that after this year, we will be continuing as Hemingway's reading list, making our way through Hemingway's required reading for great novelists in training. There's some really cool books on this list, including War and Peace and Anna Karenina and a lot of other classics. All of them are in the public domain, which means anyone who wants to read along can get a copy for free. So that's a good thing. It also means that I'm free to read them on a podcast without having to pay any royalties. Also a good thing. So I think that's kind of cool. I don't really know how to go about the admin side of this. There's a Patreon called A Year of War and Peace. The podcast itself is A Year of War and Peace. Do I change those things, keep the same domains, but change the name of the podcast to Hemingway's reading list? Do I continue calling the podcast A Year of War and Peace, even if we're not reading War and Peace? I don't want to lose my 1,160 subscribers that I now have, but it seems weird to have a podcast called War and Peace if we're not reading that book. Maybe I can do a rebrand. I have to look into that. Also curious to see how many people stick around after the new year to head into the next adventure. Anyway, I just wanted to briefly discuss that because that's what's on my mind as I prepare to do today's podcast. Today's chapter is Book 12, Chapter 3. 9 days after the abandonment of Moscow, a messenger from Kutuzov reached Petersburg with the official announcement of that event. This messenger was Michaud, a Frenchman who did not know Russian, but who was Quoge Estranger Russer de Cura de Dame, as he said of himself, which means, though a foreigner, Russian in heart and soul. The emperor at once received this messenger in his study at the Palace of Stone Island. Michaud, who had never seen Moscow before the campaign and who did not know Russian, yet felt deeply moved as he wrote when he appeared before Notre Très Gracieux Souverain, which is our most gracious sovereign, with the news of the burning of Moscow, dont les flammes éclairent la route, whose flames illuminated his route. Though the source of M. Michel's chagrin must have been different from that which caused Russians to grieve, he had such a sad face when shown into the emperor's study that the latter at once asked, "Have you brought me sad news, colonel?" "Very sad, sire," replied Michaud, lowering his eyes with a sigh. "The abandonment of Moscow." "Have they surrendered my ancient capital without a battle?" asked the emperor quickly, his face suddenly flushing. Michaud respectfully delivered the message Kutuzov had entrusted to him, which was that it had been impossible to fight before Moscow, and that as the only remaining choice was between losing the army as well as Moscow, or losing Moscow alone, the field marshal had to choose the latter. The emperor listened in silence, not looking at Michaud. "Has the enemy entered the city?" he asked. "Yes, sire, and Moscow is now in ashes." "I left it all in flames," replied Michel, in a decided tone, but glancing at the emperor, he was frightened by what he had done. The emperor began to breathe heavily and rapidly, his lower lip trembled, and tears instantly appeared in his fine blue eyes. But this lasted only a moment. He suddenly frowned, as if blaming himself for his weakness, and raising his head addressed Michaud in a firm voice. "I see, colonel, from all that is happening, that Providence requires great sacrifices of us. I am ready to submit myself in all things to his will, but tell me, Michaud, how do you How did you leave the army when it saw my ancient capital abandoned without a battle? Did you not notice discouragement? Seeing that his most gracious ruler was calm once more, Bishaw also grew calm, but was not immediately ready to reply to the emperor's direct and relevant question, which required a direct answer. Sire, will you allow me to speak frankly as befits a loyal soldier? He asked to gain time. Colonel, I always require it, replied the emperor. Conceal nothing from me. I wish to know absolutely how things are. Sire, said Bishaw, with a subtle, scarcely perceptible smile on his lips, having now prepared a well-phrased reply. Sire, I left the whole army, from its chiefs to the lowest soldier, without exception, in desperate and agonized terror. How is that? The emperor interrupted him, frowning sternly. Would misfortune make my Russians lose heart? Never. Bishaw had only waited for this to bring out the phrase he had prepared. Sire, he said with respectful playfulness, they are only afraid lest your majesty, in the goodness of your heart, should allow yourself to be persuaded to make peace. They are burning for combat, declared the representative of the Russian nation, and to prove to your majesty, by the sacrifice of their lives, how devoted they are. Ah, said the emperor, reassured, and with a kindly gleam in his eyes, he patted Bishaw on the shoulder. You set me at ease, colonel. He bent his head and was silent for some time. Well then, go back to the army, he said, drawing himself up to his full height and addressing Bishaw with a gracious and majestic gesture. And tell our brave men and all my good subjects, wherever you go, that when I have not a soldier left, I shall put myself at the head of my beloved nobility and my good peasants, and so use the last resources of my empire. It still offers me more than my enemies suppose, said the emperor, growing more and more animated. But should it ever be ordained by divine providence, he continued, raising to heaven his fine eyes shining with emotion, that my dynasty should cease to reign on the throne of my ancestors, then, after exhausting all the means at my command, I shall let my beard grow to here. He pointed halfway down his chest, and go and eat potatoes with the meanest of my peasants, rather than sign the disgrace of my country and of my beloved people, whose sacrifice now I know how to appreciate. Having uttered these words in an agitated voice, the emperor suddenly turned away, as if to hide from Bishaw the tears that rose to his eyes, and went to the further end of his study. Having stood there a few moments, he strode back to Bishaw, and pressed his arm below the elbow with a vigorous movement. The emperor's mild and handsome face was flushed, and his eyes gleamed with resolution and anger. Colonel Bishaw, do not forget what I say to you here. Perhaps we may recall it with pleasure some day, Napoleon or I, said the emperor, touching his breast. We can no longer both reign together. I have learnt to know him, and he will not deceive me any more. And the emperor paused with a frown. When he heard these words and saw the expression of firm resolution in the emperor's eyes, Michaud, Quirgi, Estranger, Ruse de Cour de Dame, at that solemn moment felt himself enraptured by all that he had heard. The translation, just to remind you of that phrase, is, though a foreigner, Russian in heart and soul. At that solemn moment felt himself enraptured by all that he had heard, as he used afterwards to say, and gave expression to his own feelings and those of the Russian people whose representative he considered himself to be, in the following words. Sire, said he, your majesty is at this moment signing the glory of the nation and the salvation of Europe. With an inclination of the head, the emperor dismissed him. Alright, there we go, another chapter down, and it looks like 9 days later, which seems like a long time, news of Russia, of Moscow's abandonment has reached Emperor Alexander. 9 days. Doesn't that seem like a long time for a message to go from Moscow to Petersburg? Too long. You'd think a message would fly over to the Emperor of something like that, but anyway, he's found out, and, well, not happy, but not rattled. He doesn't seem too rattled. He keeps going on about Providence. You always know a great leader, or at least an aspiring great leader, when they go on and on about Providence. No one ever talks about Providence except for leaders of countries. Have you noticed that? Read any manifesto or declaration of war or declaration of peace or huge pivotal writing from a nation in moments of change or progress, and they always go on and on about Providence. And Alexander is not disappointing here. He acknowledges that the army retreated from Moscow so that they didn't lose both Moscow and the army. But at this point he kind of doubles down and dedicates himself and his army to the fight ahead against the French. He's not giving up. He's not going to roll over and die. So, does that mean there's more of a fight in store for the Russians? I'm not sure if that's what that implies. But hey, he's doing what needs to be done. And he's prepared to accept the losses if he loses, putting it down to the sacrifice that is required for Providence to endure. Let's look up the definition of the word Providence. The protective care of God or of nature as a spiritual power. That's quite a thing to rely on. We had a new character in the story today, this Michaud character, a French person, doesn't speak any Russian, but for some reason he is the messenger for Kutuzov. Kutuzov sends Michaud to tell Emperor Alexander what's happened. Chatovalsta said, Michaud doesn't speak Russian, and it doesn't seem like he has spoken with the sovereign before. Why would Kutuzov send Michaud as the messenger? It's a really good question, and I'm afraid there's no answer in the comments. Chatovalsta said, it does seem suspicious that a Russian Frenchman is sent as the messenger. Caucus Tree says, is Tolstoy's practiced repetition of the phrase at heart and mind a Russian at all calculated to lend suspicion to the reader that he is less than so? Tolstoy keeps implying, insisting that this Frenchman is at heart and mind a Russian, but Caucus Tree seems to reckon that maybe he's saying that as a bit of a red herring to put us off the trail that maybe he isn't that. Chatovalsta said, this could certainly be as you say, but perhaps we're reading too much into it. I guess we'll have to wait and see. Yeah, I guess we will. I am not sure why this person was selected as a messenger. The one thing I did think, though, was that all his sympathy and his commiserations did seem a little bit put on to me, a little bit overcooked. Alright, gonna leave it there for today's chapter. Thank you very much for listening today. I will see you tomorrow.